low glycemic, and can be eaten in large quantities. Nutritional research on macular degeneration has shown that consumption of lutein and zeaxanthin, but not beta-carotene, is associated with a reduced risk for macular degeneration. People who ate the most lutein and zeaxanthin had a 57% lower risk for macular degeneration than people who ate the least. The three top sources of lutein are kale, collard greens, and spinach. Any of these greens can be found fresh, frozen, or in cans in the grocery. 2. Sweet potatoes. What a great substitute for the high-glycemic white potato, which contains much less nutritive value and less fiber. Sweet potatoes contain abundant carotenoids and are also high in vitamin C and E, potassium, and fiber. Sweet potatoes can also satisfy many people's sweet tooth. Some tribes today, i.e. in Irianjaya, eat a type of sweet potato almost exclusively and are in apparent good health. 3. Fruit. Cantaloupe, blueberries, oranges, and tomatoes. Cantaloupe is very high in carotenoids, with one cup delivering the entire recommended daily allowance of vitamins A and C. Blueberries have been shown in recent studies to be high in bioflavonoids, and thus a good antioxidant and blood thinner that helps fight cardiovascular diseases. Oranges are high in vitamin C, folic acid, and fiber, and make a very good and easily transportable snack. Tomatoes are high in vitamin A and have been indicated in many recent studies to lower the risk of prostate cancer. Also, according to research on nearly 10,000 people in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey epidemiological follow-up study, people who ate three or more fruits and vegetables a day had 27% fewer strokes, were 42% less likely to die from a stroke, and were 25% less likely to die from heart disease. 4. Green vegetables, broccoli. Broccoli is easily found and inexpensive. It is high in vitamins A and C, calcium and potassium, and folic acid. Broccoli can be eaten raw, steamed, or cooked with other vegetables or cheese dishes. 5. Beans, lentils. Beans and lentils are not only good for you, but are the least expensive substitute for white potatoes, white rice, and corn. They are high in soluble fiber, iron, potassium, calcium, and magnesium, and very high in folic acid. Researchers from Tulane University and the National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute followed the eating patterns of 9,600 people for 19 years and found that those who ate legumes, beans, peas, and peanuts, only one time a week were 22% more likely to develop heart disease than those who ate legumes at least four times a week. 6. Nuts. Almonds, walnuts. Almonds and walnuts are high in fiber, vegetable protein, vitamin E, and the good kinds of fat. Almonds are very rich in calcium, and walnuts are rich in vitamin B6 and alpha-linolenic acid, an omega-3 fatty acid. Walnuts are also high in the heart-healthy omega-3 fatty acids. Nurses who ate nuts five times a week versus once a week had 20% less diabetes. They make excellent snacks or substitutes for desserts and are among the easiest of all foods to transport. 7. Whole grains, wheat, oats, and barley. Whole grain wheat products are high in fiber, the B vitamins, and vitamin E. Whole grain breads contain many more natural vitamins and nutrients than the few vitamins added back to the enriched breads and white flours. Whole oats, barley, and rye are also good foods, with oats containing an impressive amount of soluble fiber, which has been shown to help lower LDL, the bad cholesterol. 8. Seafood. Salmon, tuna, mackerel, and sardines. These cold water fish are very high in the good omega-3 fatty acids, which have been shown to have beneficial effects in reducing cardiovascular disease. In the Physician's Health Study that followed 22,000 initially healthy men for 17 years, the men with the highest blood levels of omega-3 fatty acids had an 80% lower chance of dying suddenly from a cardiovascular-related event compared to the men with the lowest levels. Salmon, more easily catchable than the others, must have been a staple for our ancestors who, over the last 1 million years, found our Earth gripped by ice ages 90% of the time. 9. Oils. Olive oil. Olive oil is primarily a monounsaturated fat, the good fat, and has been a staple in countries that have exhibited a much lower incidence of cardiovascular disease than those following a modern Western diet. Olive oil is a good source of the not-so-easily found vitamin E. Proteins, liver, and lean meats. While many lean meats deliver abundant proteins that our bodies need as the building blocks for cell growth and assimilation of many vitamins and minerals, liver stands out in its abundance of vitamins A, C, B2, B12, and iron. Liver is also surprisingly low in saturated fat when compared to other red meats. Of course, most fish and fowl are low in saturated fat and are also excellent sources of protein. 11. Milk. Milk was not a staple for our ancestors. However, the foods just listed, as well as other acceptable foods not discussed here, generally do not supply the full amount of calcium our bodies require in an era where 3/4 of Americans do not exercise. Exercise increases the density and strength of our bones. And many others, particularly those in the higher latitudes, do not get enough sun to help their bodies make vitamin D. Vitamin D is necessary for the absorption of calcium. To get enough calcium, we recommend consumption of either milk, skim is okay, or cheese in the diet to ensure that we are getting reasonable amounts of calcium. If you are lactose intolerant, unable to digest lactose, the sugar found in milk, you should get your calcium elsewhere, however. Honorable mention, flax seeds. These small seeds are full of omega-3 fatty acids, fiber, protein, and phytoestrogens. The omega-3 alpha-linoleic acid has been shown to reduce blood clotting, and the phytoestrogen lignin is thought to help prevent hormone-related cancers, such as breast cancer and prostate cancer, and raise the HDL, good cholesterol. The most effective way to consume flax seeds is to eat them freshly ground or to remember to chew them very well, or they can pass undigested if left whole. Flax seeds can be added to cereals quite easily. Chocolate. Find yourself some high cocoa, greater than 60%, low-sugar chocolate, and you will be consuming high amounts of polyphenols and other flavonoids that are strong antioxidants. A study reported in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition in November 2001 found that a diet supplemented with cocoa powder and dark chocolate slowed the oxidation of LDL, bad cholesterol, and increased the level of HDL, good cholesterol. While you can get all the health and nutrition benefits from the basic recipes included on your PDF companion, feel free to add whatever herbs, spices, or seasonings you would like to add to enhance their flavor for your own palate. Chapter 19. Soft drinks, hard facts. The single leading source of added sugars in the average American's diet comes from the consumption of soft drinks. On average, we each consume over 55 gallons of soft drinks a year. The U.S. Department of Agriculture reports that half of all Americans drink sodas daily, and most sodas consumed are not the diet type. At 10 teaspoons of sugar in each 12-ounce can of soda, rounded down for diet soda consumption, the rough math yields about 40 pounds of sugar per person per year, or about 30% of the total added sugar consumed per person each year. Many young people consume much more. The British medical journal The Lancet reported on a recent U.S. study of 548 ethnically diverse children ages 7 to 11 that concluded that the consumption of sugar-sweetened drinks and childhood obesity are definitely linked. For each additional such drink, the children had a 60% greater chance of becoming obese. Unfortunately, sodas, with their nutritionless calories, are being consumed in copious quantities by our children. The USDA report indicates that 2/3 of female children and 3/4 of male children drink sodas daily. Further, soft drinks are replacing nutritious or neutral drinks such as water, fruit juices, and milk. In the USDA Nationwide Food Consumption Survey, conducted between 1977-78 and 1994-95, milk consumption in men decreased 17% and soft drink consumption increased 162%. Furthermore, phosphoric acid, which is present in most soft drinks, can interfere with the efficient absorption of calcium. It is easy to see why our children are not developing the proper bone density early in life, and so will be much more likely to have osteoporotic problems, including bone fractures, later on. The fact that the sodas are replacing the consumption of calcium-rich milk or fruit juices amplifies the problem. High phosphoric acid intake, together with low calcium intake, can alter the calcium-phosphorus ratio and decrease calcium absorption. Also, calcium cannot be absorbed when vitamin D is deficient. And since our children are spending less time outdoors, where the sun promotes vitamin D production in our bodies, this replacement of sodas for milk becomes even more of a problem. During the meteoric rise in adult and childhood obesity and diabetes in the last 35 years, the consumption of sodas has roughly tripled. Chapters 5, 6, and 8 tell you what the other problems brought on by obesity and diabetes. Many parents and their teenagers start their day with a sugar-loaded, caffeine-rich but nutritionless cola. Not only are they missing the vitamins and minerals they would get with a breakfast containing whole grain products and fruit or eggs, but also, as mentioned, they are even depleting their bodies of calcium. Snacks from vending machines, many of which contain high glycemic sugars and refined flours, are often consumed with a sugar-filled soft drink. Even when the snack is relatively low on the glycemic scale. Nuts, for instance, the soda raises the body's insulin response, and the body's cells are signaled to store whatever fat may be circulating in the system, regardless of its origin. To put 10 teaspoons of added sugar per regular soft drink into perspective, how many of you would scoop 10 teaspoons of sugar into a glass of tea and then sit and drink it? Nobody would. But the soft drinks are designed in such a way that neither the sugar nor the sodium or any other ingredients overpower your taste buds. Are colas and other caffeine-containing soft drinks addictive? The Johns Hopkins University Hospital and many other authorities say caffeine is addictive. Each cola contains about 1/2 as much caffeine, 45 milligrams, as a cup of instant coffee, and somewhat more caffeine than an 8-ounce glass of, say, iced tea. If these colas are being consumed routinely, especially with chocolate candy, which also contains caffeine, it is easy to see that our children's bodies can get wired on caffeine. This can cause nervousness, anxiety, and sleeplessness. Caffeine is like a lot of other compounds in that your body can tolerate small or moderate amounts without ill effects, but too much can cause problems. What can you, as an individual or parent, do about the epidemic overindulgence in these soft drinks that hit your waistline and health so hard? First, get them out of the household pantry. If they are not there to drink, they cannot be drunk by yourself or the members of your family. Replace the soft drinks with decaffeinated coffees or teas. Green tea tastes pleasant, is full of antioxidants, and doesn't suppress your hunger for other nutritious foods. Most whole fruits contain large quantities of water and make a much better snack than any of the sodas. No sugar-added lemonade is also good for you. Some of the no-sugar-added sports drinks, such as Refresher, which is full of electrolytes, which are needed after exercise, are much better choices. Second, let's take the lead from others who have taken positive action to have soft drinks eliminated from the schools, where they are so handy to our children all day. California has prohibited soft drinks from elementary and middle schools during certain hours. Several school districts in Texas have done likewise. There is a drive underway in Wyoming, led by the former head of the state's dental association, Dr. Jim Landers, a medical doctor and a leading nutritionist, to ban soft drink vending machines altogether for grades K through 12. They have encountered strong opposition from the soft drink industry, as well as some of the schools themselves, which make considerable income from the sales of these beverages, and this has slowed their progress. The group is still hopeful that the voters will see the higher wisdom of putting the present and future health of the children ahead of a few dollars for the school system. The Wyoming group points out that the consumption of soft drinks is causing a rise in tooth decay, weak bones, obesity, and diabetes, and that 80% of overweight children will become fat adults. Looked at properly, the cost savings from prevention of the many health problems for our overall society will far more than offset our current loss of revenue for our schools. Groups in other states, such as Minnesota, Ohio, and North Carolina, also are attempting to restrict the free flow of sodas to our children. We believe people are justified in trying to eliminate empty calorie, harmful products from the schools where children are developing their nutrition habits. Chapter 20, Reading Labels. The two biggest minefields we have in trying to read food labels are deciphering the total added sugar content in grams relative to the naturally occurring sugars, and trying to figure out whether a product is really whole wheat, whole grain, or stone, coarsely, ground, or whether it contains only a splash of any of the three. Whole grain products are great. Whole grain wheat products have a lot of fiber, vitamin E, B6, magnesium, zinc, potassium, copper, and hundreds of phytochemicals that can help protect you from nutritional deficiencies and diseases. But when the product name or front label says whole grain, you may only be talking about a small percent of the product, with the rest being highly refined, fiberless, and almost nutritionless wheat flour. As if that is not enough, a manufacturer can run a grain over a stone grinder and then later run it through a steel roller mill and still call it stone ground. Our advice in this deceptive world of food labeling is to look, feel, and taste a bread or flour for coarseness and the presence of a generous amount of whole grains. Also, if whole grain or whole wheat is listed first in the ingredient table, you know you are getting the benefit of all the nutritious elements of the original grain, including fiber, in the major portion of the bread or flour. But even then, if the grains have been pulverized into a fine, light, and fluffy product, the GI may be almost as high as some of the non-whole wheat products. See Figure 2 on your PDF companion. In an effort to help you better understand the rest of labeling and to make you a better Sugar Busters shopper, we have included more information on reading labels. See Figure 13 on your PDF companion for two examples of food labels. Nutritional facts are based on a single recommended serving size. The serving size is on the label. The information provided usually pertains to calories, total fats, saturated fats, cholesterol, sodium, total carbohydrate, fiber, sugars, vitamins, minerals, and other ingredients. We will discuss each one of these items separately so you can understand their significance. Calories are a basic characteristic of each food source. There are approximately 9 calories per gram of fat, 7 calories per gram of alcohol, 4 calories per gram of carbohydrate, and 4 calories per gram of protein. Obviously, foods with a higher fat content per serving will have more calories than a food with an equal content of carbohydrate or protein. Remember, calories are calculated from the basic components of the food product and, by themselves, do not indicate the important following nutritional information. Total fats are an important component of many food products. With the exception of meats, milk, and oils, fat grams should be low, approximately 1 to 3 grams per serving. Lean, trimmed meats should have no more than 5 grams of fat per serving. Low-fat cheese should have no more than 1 to 2 grams of fat per serving. 2% milk should have slightly less than 5 grams per 8-ounce glass. Products with a normally high fat content, such as cooking oils, may contain as much as 7 to 9 grams of fat, but the largest percentage of this fat should be poly or monounsaturated. These are the so-called good fats. Many products contain trans fats, which are vegetable oils to which additional hydrogen ions have been added during preparation. Trans fats have effects on our bodies similar to saturated animal fats and, when possible, should always be avoided. New federal guidelines on nutritional information hopefully will require that trans fats be listed on nutritional labels. Some common foods that often contain trans fats are margarine, cookies, donuts, pizzas, and fried foods. Trying to reduce your intake of unnecessary fats, especially saturated fats, is good, healthy, and recommended on Sugar Busters. However, we do need some fat for the proper functioning of our bodies. Removing all fat from your diet is not healthy. When it comes to fat, remember moderation. Equally as harmful to us as foods with too much fat are those that are advertised as low or no fat, which usually means high sugar. Excessive amounts of added refined sugar, as well as excessive amounts of high glycemic carbohydrates, like white flour, can ultimately be converted to and stored in our bodies as fat. Cholesterol is a component of most meat and dairy products. You should avoid ingesting unnecessary cholesterol, but in most people, diets containing several hundred milligrams of cholesterol a day are not harmful. Only 40% of the ingested cholesterol is actually absorbed into our systems. But when given a choice of different foods in a particular category, choose the ones with the lower cholesterol contents. Sodium is salt, and is added to enhance flavor or to cut the sweet taste in foods containing an overabundance of sugars. While some sodium is good for our daily diet, too much is harmful. The conventionally recommended daily allowance, RDA, of sodium is 2,400 milligrams. This is only about one half of a teaspoon. If you exercise daily, ask your doctor if you need more than the RDA for salt. Listen to the upcoming paragraph on vitamins. Carbohydrates basically refer to all the sugar, either naturally occurring or added, in a particular food product. Fruits have a high content of fruit sugar, fructose, and milk products have high content of milk sugar, galactose. But most carbohydrates are in the form of grains or starches, and as such, have very little simple sugars or sugars that are required to be added to the nutrition facts label. With the exception of fruits and dairy products, carbohydrate products, including grains and cereals, should contain as little refined sugar as possible, and in any case, no more than 5 grams of sugars per serving. A high sugars content, except in fruits and milk, is an important warning sign that the product is unacceptable on sugar busters and probably has too much added refined sugar. Why do we differentiate the fruit and milk sugars? If we use glucose as the 100% GI standard, sucrose rates 65 on that scale. Milk or galactose sugar is 43, and fructose, fruit sugar, has only a GI of 22. So 3 grams of sucrose, table sugar, gives a glycemic reaction approximately 3 times that of 3 grams of fructose, and 3 grams of fructose gives a GI 50% lower than 3 grams of milk sugar. As you can see, when trying to control blood insulin levels, blood sugar, and weight, eating the natural sugars in fruit, dairy products, and low-glycemic vegetables is preferable to eating sucrose. Additionally, you get no vitamins, minerals, and other important elements from table sugar. Fiber is an extremely important component of many carbohydrates. The higher the fiber content of a food product, the healthier it is for you. As a generality, the high-fiber fruits and vegetables are low glycemic, and they are also the fruit and vegetables that are richest in antioxidants. The incidence of colon cancer, as well as some other medical problems, is reduced in those people eating a high-fiber diet. You should eat at least 25 to 30 grams of fiber daily. Green leafy vegetables and whole grain products are excellent sources of our fiber requirements. Proteins may be derived from either plant or animal sources. Most of your protein will come from meat and dairy products, but grains and vegetables are also a good source. All balanced diets should contain sufficient protein for your basic daily requirements. It is important to note that 2 of the essential amino acids, lysine and methionine, are best derived from animal protein, and thus the optimal diet will contain some animal or fish protein. Vitamins and minerals are both important to the proper functioning of our bodies. A well-balanced diet, as suggested by the authors of Sugar Busters, contains all the essential vitamins and minerals required by a healthy person. A glass of freshly squeezed orange or grapefruit juice contains as much potassium as a ripe banana. Most foods contain more than an adequate amount of sodium. You should be careful about adding additional salt when cooking or seasoning, especially if you have a heart or blood pressure problem. If you are concerned about your daily intake of sufficient vitamins and minerals, a good commercially available vitamin with minerals such as Theragran M and Centrum more than ensures adequate daily intake of these substances. Please note that some of these multivitamins still contain, at the time of this writing, more than the recommended daily allowance of vitamin A, which has recently been lowered to 700 IUs, international units. Other ingredients are supplements and additives that processors have included in the preparation of their food products. These include high fructose corn syrup, maltodextrin, dextrose, xylol, maltose, malt, isomalt, hydrolyzed starch, hydrolyzed rice starch, syrups, honey, and brown sugar. On the label, they are listed in order from the largest to the smallest amount. Although some of these terms may not be familiar to you, they are all disguised sugars. They have been added for the purpose of enhancing the taste or thickening the particular product. Their ultimate effect will be to raise your insulin levels and create more fat on your body. Sugar alcohols, such as sorbitol and maltotal, which are often present in low-sugar diet ice creams, may cause gastrointestinal irritation and diarrhea if ingested in large amounts. Although it is often difficult to avoid these additives altogether, every effort should be made to select those products that have as few and as little of these supplements as possible. In summary, interpreting nutritional facts on food product labels is not easy, but having a little knowledge about what this information means can make your shopping on Sugar Busters much more successful. Chapter 21. Lifetime Meal Plans. Rather than a 7, 14, or 30-day meal plan, we have simply included suggestions from which you can select meals for a lifetime of healthy eating. We do recommend that you vary your selections from time to time to take advantage of the full range of natural vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients that Mother Nature has made available. By putting together your own combinations for meals, you can optimize shopping and the timely consumption of foods that have a limited shelf or refrigerator life. You can also satisfy your current cravings from the extensive list of foods allowed on the Sugar Busters lifestyle. Recipes for many of the foods can be found in the Superfoods chapter of this book, or in the Sugar Busters Quick and Easy Cookbook, or the original hardcover Sugar Busters Cut Sugar to Trim Fat. Recipes from many of your cookbooks can be modified to be acceptable on the Sugar Busters lifestyle. Some of the longer shelf-life foods are useful to have in your well-stocked pantry, as discussed in Chapter 12. We hope you enjoy putting together the various individual items that will best suit your individual palate. Breakfast suggestions from which to choose. Fruit before. Cantaloupe, honeydew, orange, grapefruit, grapes, kiwi, peach, pear, blueberries, raspberries, strawberries, or blackberries. Eggs, poached, scrambled, or fried over medium-low heat in olive or canola oil, butter, or non-hydrogenated margarine. Cheese omelet. Onion, mushroom, and tomato omelet. Ham and cheese omelet. Bell pepper and onion omelet. Smoked salmon omelet. Canadian bacon or smoked fish. Whole grain toast. 2-slice limit. Breakfast cereals. As whole grain as possible and with no sugar added. Oatmeal with milk, an artificial or natural sweetener, aspartame, saccharin, stevia, fructose, or Trutina dulcem, and some of the berries just listed. If you like, you can simply eat a breakfast of one or more of the fruits. Lunch suggestions from which to choose. Sandwiches of whole grain wheat, rye, pumpernickel, or whole wheat pita bread, either tuna salad, egg salad, chicken salad, roast beef, or grilled chicken. Also, a Reuben sandwich with dark rye bread and sauerkraut is good, as is a vegetarian sandwich or whole wheat pita pocket with avocados, alfalfa sprouts, shaved carrots, cucumbers, and other vegetables. Any entree-type salad that does not contain potatoes, sweetened salad dressings, or battered and fried meats or vegetables is okay, as well as a large fruit salad. You may also eat any of the dinner meals if you prefer your large meal at lunch. Dinner suggestions from which to choose. Skillet or broiler-grilled salmon, tuna, chicken, steak, lamb, pork, ground meat, wild game, or other fish. Also, roasted beef, pork, lamb, chicken, or wild game. Serve with at least two of the following fruits or vegetables plus a green salad. Avocado, asparagus, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, cauliflower, bell peppers, squash, zucchini, eggplant, mushrooms, cabbage, onions, tomatoes, celery, sweet potatoes, beans, pinto, black, red, navy, or garbanzo, green beans, green peas, black-eyed peas, snow peas, spinach, kale, mustard, or collard greens. Another accompaniment could be whole grain pasta with a no-sugar-added sauce. Snack suggestions from which to choose. A piece of fruit, a handful of nuts, a cup of berries, peanut butter on a celery stick, or three or four whole wheat crackers, such as Triscuits, some raw vegetables, broccoli, cauliflower, carrots, radishes, celery, bell peppers, squash, zucchini, or cherry or grape tomatoes, dipped in a no-sugar-added salad dressing or spicy salt, hard-boiled egg, half an avocado with lemon juice and salt, a piece of cheese, ripe or green olives, cocktail onions or shallots, if you work alone, a few bites of leftover meats or vegetables. Drink suggestions from which to choose. Coffee, tea, green tea, milk or water. If you must occasionally drink soda, drink a clear diet soda. It will not contain phosphoric acid, as do colas. Dessert suggestions. The Sugar Buster's lifestyle should help diminish your cravings for refined sugars, your sweet tooth. We understand, however, that you will likely eat a dessert from time to time. A few nuts can often satisfy the craving for a sweet dessert. It is probably the fat that adds the extra satisfaction from eating nuts. Fortunately, the fat in nuts is primarily monounsaturated, heart-healthy fat. One or two squares of high cocoa content chocolate, 60% or greater cocoa, is acceptable, since the sugar content is usually lower than that of low-cocoa chocolate. Modest portions of no-sugar-added ice cream are also acceptable if you have eaten a low-glycemic meal that does not contain red meat. Chapter 22. The Plateaus. Most people who change their way of eating to the Sugar Buster's lifestyle experience an initial period of rapid weight loss, which can be 2 to 3 or even 5 or more pounds in the first 2 weeks. The rate of weight loss will vary from individual to individual for many different reasons. These initial variations and subsequent variations in rate of loss can be caused by differing rates of metabolism, by how much or how little weight one needs to lose, by how closely one adheres to the new way of eating, by how much food is consumed. The temptation to eat a lot is great when you see the needle on the scale dropping despite the rather high caloric intake. By the metabolic effect of medications, birth control pills, or hormone replacement therapy, or by whether one has a medical condition, such as a thyroid disorder. One thing is certain, however, the rate of weight loss will not be on a constant, even, descending slope. After an initial weight loss of 5, 10, or even 15 pounds, you may experience a plateau a temporary cessation of weight loss, even though you have not changed your diet or exercise program. If you are lucky, it may only be a tilted plateau or a slowing of weight loss for a period of time. How long will a plateau last, and how many will you experience? Again, it will vary from individual to individual. Based on reports from many of the followers of the Sugar Busters lifestyle, plateaus can last from 1 week to as many as 6 weeks before weight loss or a higher rate of weight loss resumes. People who need to lose 10 pounds or so and lose it all in the first few weeks may never experience a plateau. For those needing to lose many tens or over 100 pounds, it is likely several plateaus of short duration or even a six-weeker will be experienced. Do not let the plateaus discourage you. They are common, and they will be temporary until you reach your natural weight. How can you determine your natural weight? Can it be read from a chart of height, weight, and age? No, not precisely. Many of us are simply built differently. Some have small bones, small waists, and small muscles. Others have larger bones, larger waists, and larger muscles. Ditto for people of any height. All that said, using a target of a body mass index less than 25 is usually reasonable. A good rule of thumb once was to go back and look at a picture of your body around age 21 to 25 and assume you could approach, but probably not reach, that weight again through following a program of good diet and exercise. We say it once was a good rule of thumb because a few decades back, the average person was much thinner at age 21 to 25 than an average person is today. The earlier generations ate better and got more exercise. They ate fewer highly refined foods and far less added sugar, and they exercised more because of fewer convenience devices, including the lack of a car for every member of the family, and had fewer attractions that can entertain one without any physical exercise participation, such as watching television or operating a computer. But today, a high percentage of our young adults are overweight, and a significant percentage are already obese. Since our gene pools have not had time to change dramatically in just a few decades, we believe the once-was target can still be used even for the younger generation. We suggest you look at a picture of your parents or grandparents when they were in their early to mid-20s. Use that to pick a reasonable target for your desired weight and eat your way to it. The beauty of the Sugar Busters lifestyle is that you will not feel deprived of good, filling foods or of a tremendous variety of foods while you eat your way to success. Chapter 23. Why Sugar Busters? The bookstores are now carrying many best-selling diet books that recommend many of the things that were included in our original Sugar Busters, Cut Sugar to Trim Fat. We are happy to see that people are waking up to the fact that diets loaded with high glycemic carbohydrates have been causing rampant weight gain and its associated health problems. However, the most common criticism we hear about most of these books is that they contain too much detailed biochemistry or require too much counting and measuring for the average person. A diet of low glycemic carbohydrates is not necessarily the same as a low carbohydrate diet. Our ancestors, who successfully got us here, did not have high glycemic carbohydrates to eat, and they certainly did not know what vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients their foods contained. Neither did they count their carbohydrates or protein or fat grams. As reported in our earlier books and meal plans, We think a diet should have carbohydrates as its major source of calories. That content can exceed 50% if all the carbohydrates are of the high-fiber, low-glycemic type. Eat a good variety of them, and you will be well on your way to satisfying your various nutritional requirements. Just keep it simple, and start out like you can hold out. Regarding the current debate on high-protein, high-fat diets like Atkins versus low-fat or non-fat diets like Ornish, we see significant advantages of eating the Sugar Busters way. First, the Sugar Busters lifestyle encourages a diet in which at least 40% of calories come from high-fiber, low-glycemic carbohydrates. These carbohydrates deliver huge amounts of vitamins, minerals, antioxidants, and trace elements that are not present in the meats consumed in an Atkins-like diet. Second, the Sugar Busters lifestyle provides about 30% of calories from protein, including some animal protein, which provides the building blocks for optimum cell formation. The lifestyle also suggests that about 30% of calories come from fat, which contains the fatty acids that are needed for optimum health and nutrition. The animal proteins are not available in a vegetarian type or vegan diet. Third, the Sugar Busters lifestyle is a healthy and balanced plan that provides not only the necessary variety of vitamins and minerals from natural foods, but also the satisfaction and enjoyment not consistently available from the more extreme diets. Fourth, the Sugar Busters lifestyle is simple and easy to follow. There is no initial period of crash dieting required. There are no food exchange values to count. There is not much high-tech biochemistry included, which can confuse the average person. The following paragraphs contain brief comments on some of the other diets currently available in bookstores around the country. Dr. Atkins certainly deserves credit for being the early champion in the modern era of eating more protein and fat as a weight loss tool. He pointed out many of the pitfalls of high-carbohydrate diets. We don't understand why he so severely limits all types of carbohydrates, which then requires the consumption of expensive vitamin and mineral supplements, which he is happy to sell you. As has been demonstrated by the legions of Sugar Busters followers, weight loss and nutritious eating can be achieved simultaneously by including the low-glycemic, high-fiber, natural carbohydrates in one's daily eating plan, and the latter plan can be followed enjoyably for a lifetime. Sugar Busters is not an Atkins-like way of eating. Dean Ornish's diet, Eat More, Weigh Less, may be of some benefit to people with severe blood chemistry or cardiovascular problems, but it's certainly not a natural way of eating. No meat, no oils, no nuts. How did our ancestors get us here? What did they eat in the long winter months when the fruits and vegetables did not grow? Only meat, seeds, and nuts were available for survival, except for those peoples who lived very near the equator. We also note that Ornish's last no-no is sugar, which, with the significant calorie restrictions of his diet, may just be what causes the weight loss that can occur on his diet. The Zone by Dr. Barry Sears contains a lot of good information and advice, but it also contains so much biochemistry that the average person easily can get confused as to what causes what. Also, many of his followers tire of the constant counting required to stay in the zone. Again, you can bet our forefathers never worried about a zone, since they only had low-glycemic fruits, vegetables, and whole grains available, they just naturally stayed in the zone, the way one can today by simply following the Sugar Busters lifestyle. The protein power diet is well presented and well researched, and it is undoubtedly of use to professional nutritionists and dietitians. However, the book contains so much biochemistry that it loses its chance to be an easily understandable and easy-to-follow guide for the average citizen. The Carbohydrate Addict's Diet, which allows you to pig out prior to bedtime, just doesn't make sense. Most of a person's cholesterol is made at night, and the natural metabolism also slows with the lack of physical movement, so why say it is all right to stoke the fire by having a huge evening meal? Why not just have people eat the right carbohydrates, high fiber, low glycemic, in significant quantities, and let it go at that? Dr. Andrew Wiles says in Eating Well for Optimal Health that it is okay to be fat, and we understand the point he is trying to make. But when the national statistics so clearly indicate the myriad diseases associated with being fat, we don't think people should be told it is okay to be fat, even if they would love to hear it. They will read that and conveniently forget or ignore many of the other important points in his book. While Jenny Brand Miller and colleagues have certainly participated in a lot of valuable glycemic index measurements in Australia, the conclusions in her book, The Glycemic Revolution, are that eating sugar, high glycemic white potatoes, and other such foods is okay. That can seem like great news for Americans who are consuming an average of almost 50 teaspoons of added, almost nutritionless refined sugar per person per day and experiencing epidemic problems with obesity, diabetes, and related diseases. Even though she indicates from time to time that people should eat low glycemic meals and makes the point that a low glycemic index piece of meat consumed with a very high glycemic carbohydrate, like a white potato, will moderate the overall glycemic response, she misses the point that the same piece of meat consumed with a low glycemic index carbohydrate will give a still lower glycemic response and also deliver necessary vitamins and minerals, producing even greater weight loss or control. Following are some summary quotes by Brandmiller and colleagues. Low GI diets can help people lose weight. To make the change to a low GI diet, use more pastas and rice in place of potatoes. And then, on the very next page, bread and potatoes are rich in carbohydrate and therefore among the best foods you can eat to help you lose weight. On the same page is, some starch, like that in potatoes, is digested in a flash, causing a greater rise in blood sugar than many sugar-containing foods. Sugar has no unique role in causing diabetes. Foods that produce high blood sugar levels may increase the risk of diabetes. Well, according to her own GI tables, sugar is not a low GI food, and also, refined sugar is usually associated with highly processed flours that have a high GI value. Diets high in sugar are less nutritious. Not true. Sugar, from a range of sources, including dairy products and fruit, often has higher levels of micronutrients. Here, Brand Miller is switching back and forth on whether she is talking about refined sugar or about the natural sugars found in fruits, grains, and vegetables. Are you confused yet? So are we. The Sugar Buster's bottom line is this. Why encourage consumption of refined sugar and high glycemic carbohydrates at all in light of the fact that the resulting obesity has done so much harm to so many people? If you want confirmation that it is not the consumption of fat that has been making us fat, consider the Duke University 6-month trial of the Atkins diet versus the American Heart Association's low-fat, step 1 diet. The Atkins diet contains 60% fat and beat the AHA diet on every count. Weight loss, HDL, good cholesterol improvement, and reduction in triglycerides. So, why not just choose the Atkins diet?